this is so pandering, but I've like thoroughly just enjoyed your class, and I'm literally like stealing stuff and using it for work too, which has been awesome.
Because
I come from a family of software engineers, and like my brother and roommate is like so it's very cool.
That's so nice. That's very nice. I'm glad to hear that because it's so hard to tell anything over Zoom. I'm just like, is anybody enjoying this? Like, anyone getting anything out of this? Because it's really hard to tell.
Oh, I can't imagine.
It's great though. You have a family of engineers. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. I feel like I can like kind of fake it with them now. Like, I fully understand like a software stack and how everything plays. But then, you know, like obviously can't code or anything.
But it's okay. It's not worth it.
Welcome to season 4 of Made for Music. I am your host, Duncan Byerjohn. For those that are unfamiliar, this podcast seeks to depict a comprehensive view of the music world from the artistry to the business so you can discover the resources available to you and, most importantly, the stories behind the people making things happen. If you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. Also, just launched a newsletter you can sign up for at madeformusicpodcast.com featuring podcast alumni, music reviews, and insights into the ever-evolving business. But without further ado, here is the next episode of Made for Music. Welcome to Made for Music. Today's friend of the podcast is literally teaching me about the music game. Graduating from Harvard with a degree in computer science, she went on to work at Next Big Sound, a platform acquired by Pandora to provide social media streaming service and radio analytics. But that's really just a small part of the story. So hailing from the Bay Area, she started on piano circa 4 years old and has done nothing but take the music world by storm, going on to do amazing things such as Hadestown to a recent streaming production of the last 5 years from Out of the Box, and next up, a secret movie project. So without further ado, please welcome Berklee College of Music's Instructor of Data Analytics, Cynthia Meng.
Thanks for having me. So excited to be here.
Of course. I guess before we get into all the stuff you're working on now, which is super cool, I'd love to hear what music was like for you growing up. And did you always know that you wanted to live in that world, if you will?
That's a kind of an interesting question because, yes, it was a huge part of my life. And, you know, maybe if this were a different podcast, we would go into the whole idea of immigrant parents making their kids learn piano or violin or whatever, you know, instrument in the classical world, and then getting kind of upset that they are interested in pursuing music for a career. So it was indeed something that was a huge part of my life growing up. I was classically trained. I did the whole competition route, that whole world of music. And but I also did a lot of theater in school, just like kind of extracurricularly, so to speak. But it was never really in the cards, at least growing up, that I would become a musician or work in the music industry. I think I always thought of it maybe as like a thing you did to get into college, because that's kind of what my life was before I went to college and then became a person. it was always a huge part of my life, but it wasn't really until I was even about to graduate college that I even seriously considered it as a career. And I'm so glad that I did, because now that's what I do. But it took a little while to get there, for sure.
So you actually really like did love it the whole time, though, it sounds like, or had a love for music in general? Or?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think I liked playing piano. I did not like the structures that I was placed in, the competition life, that kind of stuff. I mean, it was really difficult, and like there was some really like traumatic stuff that came out of that. But I remember loving music, and I loved, in fact, like popular music and working with my peers in a collaborative setting. That was something I also really enjoyed. So like, yeah, I loved aspects of it, but I couldn't really parse through those feelings until I think I was older.
A big part of that was like prepping for college, essentially. And I think a lot. I mean, I certainly relate to that because everything I did was like sports or music to get it on the resume. And then got to college, I was like, oh, shoot, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Were you doing music stuff in college then too, or just strictly focused on, you know, academia until, because you mentioned music kind of after the fact?
No, it was a huge part of my life in college. But again, it wasn't like I wasn't majoring in music, and I still wasn't really thinking about it as a profession, just because it wasn't encouraged to me that way. And it never felt like an actual viable path. Maybe business certainly at some point, but I was doing it all, it felt like, outside of school, right? I was studying computer science, which was frankly a degree that I picked because it required the least amount of credits to graduate, and I didn't have a lot of direction. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I felt like it was a good, you know, I liked the subject material, and I was like, great. I only need 10 credits to graduate with a degree. So I'm just going to take this major and then do a bunch of other shit like outside of the major, which is indeed what I ended up doing.
Blows my mind that computer science had like, I guess, less credits to graduate than you would have anticipated, just because it's such an intensive course load.
Yeah, I mean, well, the classes were hard. That was another thing. So it was certainly, it was just basically like somehow the minimum requirements were very low, as opposed to a lot of other majors where you had to take a lot of classes in those fields, which would limit the things you could do outside of those classes.
Right. And of course now, and I don't mean to jump the gun too much, you're teaching at Berkeley. Was there any sort of crossover while you were in Massachusetts with Berkeley folks, or was that just something that completely happened later?
No, I mean, like we kind of like would interact like with Berkeley folk if they came to Harvard to like play a show, right? Like that was like the only, and then in fact, that's how I met my partner, who I'm still with today, in college, and he was like playing a show at Harvard. So was, you know, there was a little bit of crossover there, but like not really. And now they have this dual degree program. They have this, like, you can get a master's in music at Berkeley and also like do a degree at Harvard. And it's like a very integrated, to my understanding, integrated program. And I was like, what the hell? Like, I would have loved to do that. That would have been awesome if that had been around when I was in school. But
are they close together campus wise?
Yeah, they're fairly close. I would say like it's like a 20-minute distance with public transportation. Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking of all the times I sprinted across campus for classes, and I was trying to think like if you had to jump campuses or whatever.
Yeah, you probably have to plan it. Yeah, you probably have to, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm not in the program, but I assume you kind of plan out the time. And then also it's a 5-year program as opposed to 4 years. You're getting the master's degree. Yeah. It's kind of a power then.
Yeah. Is there like a music business program at Harvard?
No, there's not. Okay. There's only there's not even really a music performance major. There's only music, I think, in a very academic sense, like ethnomusicology or this, like the study of music as a theory and things like that. So that was definitely never interesting to me. I was, you know, if I was going to major in something, it would have been either performance or it would have been like business minded. And even then, I don't know, I had a lot of like chips on my shoulder from my family and things like that about, you know, wanting to get a degree that would be quote unquote sensible. So
well, so it's pretty incredible then that you were able to like marry the two. And was that intentional then, like upon graduating, were you like, I'm gonna find like a music related software engineering position, or do you mind walking me through how that happened?
No, it was not intentional. I had interned over the summer for like a trading firm like in Chicago, like a finance trading firm, and I liked it enough. I liked the experience, you know, and it was like an internship, so that was great. But I kind of knew that like the industry wasn't for me. And then of course I interviewed like all the big tech companies and had a, you know, a few options. But my dad actually was a software engineer at a company called Gracenote, which was like a very, you know, one of the predecessors in terms of like music metadata and things like that. They worked with the CDDB and you know, eventually, like, I think now they've been subsumed by something else, but he had heard of the startup called Next Big Sound and was like, well, you know, you like music, so maybe you should like look into this. And it actually was a great recommendation because I reached out and it was amazing. I had actually reached out for an internship and ended up taking like the higher paying like finance internship, and then realized like that was not for me, and then kind of came crawling back like, hey, like, do you guys have any openings for entry level jobs? This is my senior year of college. And
Right.
luckily they still did, and they offered me a job, and then before I even graduated, they got acquired by Pandora. So then I was like substituted into Pandora. But
Nice.
I just remember feeling like I just wanted to make choices like that were like good at the moment. And in the end, that was a really good choice that I made. I don't think that I had any foresight about it, but I was just like, this looks cool. And I think I want to be happy, and I love music, and I want to work in the music industry. So, and I have to be an engineer because I can't do anything else, I guess. So let me do this. And it was a really great decision. I had a lot of benefits that I couldn't have even foreseen, you know, when I was graduating from school, let's say like 5.5 years ago, as opposed to now in a pandemic, seeing all the good things that have come from it. So
for sure. Yeah. And so I take it that's what took you to New York then.
Yeah. So that the job was in New York.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, I mean, yeah, the current situation's obviously wonderful. And then, so you go to New York then, and you mentioned you'd always been really into theater. Were you going to like Broadway shows, or what was that experience like going to New York and working at a music company and just, you know, being like a lover of music?
Yeah, I had worked in theater like in school, and I really liked the aspect of being like a music director. So the conductor and then the person who works with the actors and teaches them the music and is kind of like in charge of the music. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really realize that was like a job you could have. I think, you know, again, visibility and understanding of that was not something that was clear to me until maybe I was about to graduate. And so when I came to the city, I had this vague idea that I would like maybe gig on the side and like do my day job and then just like see where things went. And so I was just doing a lot of like odd jobs. I was like playing piano for this like random like improv shows and like playing, you know, assisting, doing random score work for people. And wow. it was like a very, I don't know, like I loved theater, and I would go watch it. Right. And then I would like slowly become like more ensconced in the world. And then at some point, it just felt like, oh, I'm actually in the scene. Like I am a member of this scene, and I am like a big, you know, I have potential to really make this my career. And so that was when I ultimately made the leap to just like quit the full-time job and be a freelancer. But it wasn't like so well thought out, I think, when I first got here.
I was talking with Tegan, who is a classmate of mine, and then also she actually was just on the podcast a couple months ago. One thing that I think is a really shared sentiment among a lot of like both classmates and musicians that I know is not recognizing that certain aspects are an avenue you can take. I guess for someone that is like interested in exploring that space, what advice would you have to someone, whether, you know, they're just looking to get their foot in the door on the production side or play or anything like that?
Well, for the theater scene, it's a really small scene. That's the good news, right? And it's like, it's right. so localized. And if you're looking for Broadway, then you come to New York. That's, you know, that's pretty much the first step you take. A lot of people I know don't even necessarily have their sights set on Broadway. I think for me, it was just like an avenue that was shown to me in school. And then I kind of like chased that. But a lot of, like, I think it's important to just, you know, first of all, to come here. If you're going to try to do the theater thing, then come to where theater is made and come to where theater thrives and has its, you know, roots and things like that. And I think New York it's just a no-brainer, especially for that industry. And then also, like, you know, when you're here, like, become a part of the community, like be a part of the community, go to shows and then do the shitty gigs that don't pay you anything, but that you meet a lot of people and then you just kind of entrench yourself in the community. And in a way, being a part of the community is also like a huge part of, you know, doing the job, is that you're a member of it and that you give back to it and you, because you also take from it as well.
For those who aren't maybe familiar with New York, obviously not without like giving away like personal information or anything like that, but like locale wise, what's the avenue to entrench yourself in the scene without, you know, knocking down doors kind of thing?
Sure. I mean, there's like the ad with the advent of technology, like there's Facebook, right? And there's lots of like groups and things like that. And there's lots of ways to find community like virtually as well. And in non-pandemic times, there's probably like, meetups and stuff, but also like, yeah, concerts and shows and then like sometimes like, yeah, cold calling people and being like, hey, like, can I take you out for a coffee and just talking to them. That is a thing that people, I've done it. Everyone's done it, I think. And it's the real world is not like college. You don't have necessarily these super built-in events for you to like meet lots of people that you take for granted when you're in college. But you can sort of make those opportunities happen for yourself as well. When you by being a part of the virtual community and then seeing what's out there. But I also recognize that it's hard. I came here with some privilege. I came here because and lots of my friends moved to the city, so I had friends. And also furthermore, I had friends who were like trying to do theater. So like then I like knew people in that way. So it's tough. I really feel for people who come and they don't know a single person. Like that's crazy to me. But people do it nevertheless, and it's amazing.
Kind of a curveball, I guess, here, but coming from like the software world and then into theater, even pre-pandemic, did you have, I guess, another lens or a unique lens into the theater world that like helped you coming from, say, like an analytics company that was focused on music and then coming into theater?
Necessarily think there was any crossover between like Next Big Sound and the theater world. Like it always felt a little bit separate to me. But at the same time, like, I think I've been able to really make a my entrance or climb in my career in the theater world because of my ability to be technical and my ability to bring those kind of like other skills into my work. And in an industry where technology can be a little bit slow, or at least like the way that people think about technology, people can be really averse to it. I think that has proven to be an advantage for me. I just like, I'm not even like particularly an amazing programmer, I would say. I think I work really hard and I'm like good at asking questions and I'm generally diligent. But I'm certainly no savant. I don't even feel as like so passionately about it as other people, but I'm good at learning. And I think that really helps when it comes to software, like learning notation software or like learning like Ableton or MainStage, things like that. Like, right, all those things, like those are softwares that programmers built, and knowing how a computer thinks and knowing how to like almost like talk to the software is a skill in and of itself, and I think that's proven really helpful for me. So that's where the crossover happens. It's like it's the skill, it's the ability to be quick on your feet, it's the ability to learn fast that has been a real boon for me, I guess.
And you mentioned Ableton. I'm actually recording into it right now. It's fascinating. I guess in my head, it never registered that that would be a part of the theater world. Is that something that's leveraged for production?
A lot of shows use it nowadays for triggering tracks and playback and things like that, because a lot of shows have synthetic sounds, right? And so much is being tied with like automation with the sets and the lights, and then you want to tie it to the track, and so Ableton's really good for that. You can send out signals and just coordinate everything to the track itself and still have it be a DAW, right? Like a digital audio workstation. It doesn't have to be just a QLab playback. It actually has some like intelligence to it in understanding the music.
That's awesome. I literally had no idea. I figured it was either all playback and or, the pit. And this is such an ignorant question, but I'm fascinated. My extent of theater was like high school, and so obviously it was just all like analog. Are they doing like a click then? Is like everyone just on the click
Lots of
and
shows have mostly on click. I mean, like we're in the pop world now, right? The theater world
totally.
has now caught up to the pop way we make pop music, and so much pop music is quantized and properly set to BPM and has like really just like everybody locking into the exact same tempo, and the drummer is locking in with the click, and everyone's locking in with the drummer and the click. And so, yeah, it's very, very common.
Wow, that totally makes sense. I don't know why I'm like so blown away by that, because it's like obviously when you've got what like orchestra and the everyone, the cast. That's fascinating. I guess it never registered, which is silly because I've seen like the boards that are on the side stage and whatnot. But I feel like especially recently, like the past like 5-10 years, there's really been that marriage of pop and musicals, and mm-hmm. I guess it's been longer than that, you know, Rock of Ages has been around forever or whatever, but it almost seems like there's like a 20 to 30 year lag's not the right word, but it's almost like capitalized, like where it seemed like, you know, Jagged Little Pill coming to stage, yeah, and whatnot, and there's these like catalogs that are being brought to Broadway, which is really fascinating. I guess from your perspective, how do you see that impacting, say, like the future of theater?
Well, I mean, I do think that like the kind of jukebox musical thing is a pretty tried and true model of financial success. So mm-hmm. I think there will be a lot more of those. I mean, just on Broadway alone this year, like most of the musicals were jukeboxes. And I think when they announced like the Tony nominations, like there wasn't even an original, or there was one original score that could have been nominated, but it was a whole thing. It got snubbed, but nothing got nominated from musicals because everything was like, it was like Tina Turner and Jagged Little Pill and Girl from North Country, which is a Dylan musical. So there's a lot of interest in jukebox. Whether or not I think that's a good artistic decision is kind of its own debate. But, you know, I think there's a lot of kind of talk in the theater community of like, well, is this, you know, is this what we should be doing? Should we be supporting a jukebox musical, or should we be uplifting new art, and should we be uplifting new composers and original scores? And, you know, I mean, of course, not of course, but I would argue that that's better, you know, from my perspective. But I also understand that theater, you know, especially at the Broadway level, it's commercial. It's you have to make money, and it's an avenue for producers to make money. And then it's an avenue for tourists, a lot of whom, you know, like those jukebox, you know, the source material, and then want to see it played out on stage. Like that, you know, it's, I get the appeal. And so, yeah, I do think on some level it's here to stay. And I hope that, you know, we don't go too far in that direction. Otherwise there's just no original material coming out.
Another thing that, and obviously I have a bias slant, is what's cool is how social media is now launching like the Bridgerton musical and whatnot. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Is that an avenue that is being looked at of, oh, we can actually look around more for, because I know, especially in the pandemic, a lot of folks in the theater community took to social media, you know, in mm-hmm. digital performances. From like a scouting perspective, is that something that's being looked into?
A&R like for popular music or for,
yeah,
for theater?
For like theater, yeah, love, like, you know, there's the Abigail Barlow instance where it's like, oh, clearly there's an idea that caught on and is getting press and whatnot, and obviously it's to be determined if anything gets, you know, brought to stage. But did that open folks up to the idea, I guess it would be, oh, maybe we do look to creators writing stuff online that's catching, as far as looking for something to produce out?
Yeah, I certainly think so. You know, like, I mean, they're always chasing where the interest is, right? And people are on TikTok right now. And so they, you know, people, like producers, I'm sure, are looking at that. I know Bridgerton, you know, I feel like there was a lot of talk around who would represent them and like, how could we make this a thing? And I, you know, of course, I don't know personally, but I imagine that was the case. And I heard a few like mumblings here and there, but like, yeah, people are always going to be chasing like, oh, where's the attention going? I think, you know, I've heard of a few TikTok musicals like being produced. Like my partner is working on one.
Nice.
Like mixing it, I guess.
But
yeah, I'm curious to see if it stays. That's kind of my curiosity in today's world of, you know, the ephemeral. We're just interested in shorter and shorter ways to consume art, and I'm curious to see how far we go and where it stops or doesn't stop.
I'd love to talk about some like your highlights too that you mentioned beforehand. Do you mind walking me through like the Hadestown experience?
Yeah, it was my first like Broadway gig, and it was magical and beautiful. Like I was just so excited to be there. That's definitely like how I can describe it. It was like, I was just super happy to be there. And then I feel really, I think very fondly of everybody there. And it's a wonderful community of people. And so I got the job. I had worked with the director of the show, Rachel Chavkin, on another project. And so I had kind of asked her, like, hey, like, is, you know, I love this show. I love the music. I remember listening to the music and being like, oh my God, this is amazing. Yeah. I knew it was coming to Broadway. So I was like, oh my God, I have to like try to get on this, you know, one way or another. And so I ended up interviewing with the music director and we really hit it off. And so, yeah, it was a position that was like well-suited for me, and a music assistant position. It was, you know, as somebody, I had just gone freelance, right? And so I was very much in the position of like, I am hungry for a gig and I'm going to take it. And so,
yeah,
I ended up getting that. And I was working on the score mostly. So in the theater world, like when you work on a show, like the show is like constantly changing, right? And and you have to be able to distribute those changes to the actors and keep track of what the state of truth is. And so it usually falls on the music assistant to do that. You have to have a good ear. You have to know the software really well. You have to be organized. All those things, you know, suit me really well. So I would say I was a very strong music assistant for a lot of different things. And so, yeah, I was with the show from our first rehearsal until we opened on Broadway. And then I continued to play rehearsal piano for them afterwards and still be kind of like involved in the show after, you know, it was running for a year and then COVID happened. So, yeah, I felt, you know, it was a really beautiful experience just getting to watch geniuses at work. That's how I describe. You know, Rachel Chavkin is genius, and Anais like writes just beautiful music, and of course our orchestrators were just weaving magic out of those arrangements, right, and making something so beautiful come out of it. And it was also like, you know, and I have to say there was something beautiful about it being an original score. It was something new, brand new, and coming to life and being a part of that experience is something I will never ever forget and will cherish like literally for the rest of my life. So
yeah,
it was great.
Like, how often is it changing? Because I guess that's something that most people don't get to see, right? It's you show up for the show and they're just so in it. It just seems like it's been that way forever.
Yeah, I mean, it changes until we open, right? And then you freeze the show, and then if you want to change it, you have to like go through a whole process to change it again. But no, it changes pretty often, I would say, from first day rehearsal until like the day you freeze the show.
Wow.
And it's a lot. There's lyric changes and like the cut stuff and add stuff and okay, here's a new interlude. I would actually say that Hadestown was like maybe like, because it had been through so many iterations before, it like went to London, it was in Canada, it was at New York, off Broadway. Like it had already been through quite a few iterations, and so by the time they reached Broadway, most of it stayed the same, although there were quite a lot of tweaks here and there. And of course, stuff for the ensemble really, really changed a lot. So it was a pretty intense process.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's very cool. I can't imagine having to like go and update all the sessions and then distribute to everybody. Because like you said, I mean, there's what?
Like it's more just like everybody has to be on the same page, not just the actors, but like the stage manager and then, you know, all the sound people and the lighting people. We all have to be operating the same knowledge of the same thing. So a small change can have a really big ripple effect.
For sure. And then you mentioned, unfortunately, that ended to COVID, but you also did a streaming production as well. Are you able to talk about that at all with the last 5 years? And
it's being produced by a company called Out of the Box Theatrics, who specializes kind of in site-specific productions, which is a very like theater thing. But it's really wonderful. And we did this production of a pretty well-known show called The Last 5 Years. Written by a guy named Jason Robert Brown, and it tells the story of a couple who eventually, like, they're married and then they end up divorced, and they tell the story from two different perspectives, like starting at the beginning and one starting at the end of the marriage, and then going like this.
I've heard,
it's a pretty well known, I would say, like in the music, especially in the theater world, it's like very, very well known. So yeah, it's a streaming production in it, just in the sense that it that's the way they distribute the medium, right? It's not there aren't audiences watching it happen live. It was filmed like a film, like a proper movie almost, and then it's just being streamed. But it was a real labor of love. It took a long time not a long time, but it was a lot of work to get it done. And so we filmed over a course of 4 days, and we had rehearsals before then, and then we had to, after the fact, we recorded all the musicians. I clicked out the whole show. It was a whole thing. So it was very much a labor of love, but it reminded me like just how much I love making theater, like making art. It's such a beautiful thing to be able to do it. And we were able to do it in person for the most part, which was pretty intense. COVID-wise. So
that's awesome. And did that lead to this next project?
No, that was separate actually, but I'm very excited for that too. Which unfortunately I can't really say anything else about, but I'm very excited for it. Yeah.
That's awesome. At the same time you came into teaching at Berkeley. So do you mind walking me through that, and like what's that balance like trying to teach folks across the globe really while also balancing like some of these projects?
Well, you know, it's like when you're a freelancer, you just do it, right? And I took on the Berkeley thing, honestly, because I didn't have another job at the time. A former coworker of mine, actually from Next Big Sound, she was the one who made the class. Her name is Leif Bulley. She's amazing. And she had that was like her gig. And she made the curriculum and then was just like teaching it. And then she has some other projects she kind of wanted to hop onto. So she was like, hey, you'd probably be great for this because like you're an engineer, so you have all the technical knowledge of the stuff that I teach the students, and you are in the music industry, and you probably like teaching, and so I was like, cool, this sounds interesting. Like I need a job. So like, let me do this, please. And over the course of the pandemic, I ended up taking on a full-time job. I'm a software developer, so I did get a full-time gig, and then also the arts project. But that's the thing. I just like working. I like doing that. I thrive when I'm busy, I think. Maybe that's something that I'll explore with my therapist one day, and we'll talk
that's
about
what I'm
that.
Doing.
But yeah. But like, you know, I love it. I love all the different kinds of work that I do. And the teaching thing piques a very, very different part of my brain and lets me really like become like more well-rounded person in the music industry, right? I don't think it makes me a better musician necessarily, but like it's just good to be a part of this community too. It's building community in this way. And I've even been lucky enough that like some of my peers like in the theater industry are like pursuing master's degrees during the pandemic. So I actually got to teach like a couple of them, which was really
fun. No way. That's awesome. Yeah. Do you just have to like pretend you don't know when they're sitting like,
No, I mean, like we all know each other. That's the thing, you know?
Right.
Just, like,
yeah.
It's just nice. Yeah.
That's awesome. Have you noticed a pattern of maybe like where a lot of the shortcomings are for folks headed into the music industry, or just stuff that people haven't considered that should be more top of mind, especially with like analytics, right? I think one thing that was eye-opening for me is A, the resources that were there, like that you could have a Chartmetric account. Like I'd never even heard of it. And then I was like, oh, you can have a free account. What's the biggest blind spot you think folks, particularly the artists, have coming into that world?
I think that people have this misconception that data analytics is just like some, like you just sit there and you get the data, right? Like I mean, and like, yes, that is certainly a thing, and there's lots of products that do that that are, you know, valued very highly, but also like so much of it is stuff that, you know, like data is just information that you gather. So like, so much of it you do on your own, and the best kind of research, I think, is the kind where you like do just put in a little bit of effort, and then you can get quite a lot out of it, right? And I think I always try to urge my students the same way. It's like, yeah, okay, you can sit there and you can trawl Chartmetric and then just kind of do the bare minimum, but like the most interesting insights come when you just dig a little tiny bit deeper on your own into stuff that isn't necessarily easily prepackaged for you and given to you, and like, a lot of that power is in our own hands too. Like for artists, especially, like, you know, you are always in the process of trying to find out where your fans are and who are they and what do they like and how can I interact with them in a way that speaks to them and is also true to me as an artist. And it's like, that stuff is data analytics. It doesn't seem like it. It's not number crunching, but it is analyzing the information you have at your disposal. And that's like a totally important part of an artist's career is understanding communication and how to communicate and where and when. So, yeah.
And I didn't even know, for example, until you taught me that you could like pull. I didn't even know you could do scripts in like Google Sheets and then pull from Spotify, which was incredible. Cause I think the notion I had at least was you have to go pay for a service.
I mean, of course there is some stuff that you can't, you know, that you have to have permission to get. And like that, like, I don't want to like say it's like, oh, like, yeah, you can do everything for free, but it's, but it's like, you know, there is a lot you can do without needing the, you know, the expensive tools. You can do a lot on your own as well.
Yeah. Well, it's truly been an absolute blast learning from you. And so, yeah, selfishly for other folks, I hope it hope you continue. But before I let you go, I have some like this get stumped section that I have where I just throw kind of an either or at you if you're game.
Amazing. Let's do it.
And it's just preferences. And so what did you enjoy writing more, outstanding or high school essays?
Oh my God, you found that. That is, I need to get that off the internet.
I do my research.
See, I told you a lot of my life was gearing up for college. That was written as part of that. I would say I enjoyed the process, honestly, probably of writing the essays more.
Oh yeah.
And I've always thought to myself that I need to write another book so I can like erase the first one from the face of the book.
Right on. Phoebe Bridgers or Sarah Jarosz?
Oh yeah. Well, oh my God, I love both of them. I mean, I literally posted about Sarah yesterday on Instagram, and then she she reposted my story, and I was like, oh my God, I'm a huge fan. So I cannot choose between the two. They are both amazing musicians, and I respect both of them so dearly.
Right on. Well, then Sarah or Jason Mraz?
Oh. Well, what I wrote the to you originally, I respect the art, but that first record is like, I think, really incredible and has amazing writing. I will still go with Sarah just because I think she's like literally a prodigy. But I will say that On Love and In Sadness is like one of my favorite songs of all time. And it's just an excellent example of setting poetry to music in a way that is like so genius. It's like such a beautiful, I don't know, I think the words are so beautiful, and I've done my research of the poem that song was based on, and it's like, it's just amazing, the original source material and then what he ended up with. So yeah, it's a spiel on that.
Yeah, no, it totally makes sense. And then what had you enjoyed more, like, do you enjoy the playing music with the ensemble or like doing the music, like the music assistant role?
Oh, playing. Yeah. Oh, no. I don't think anyone wants to be an assistant like forever. that shit is like, you can get tired of it pretty fast. So no, definitely the playing.
For sure. With the projects you're a part of, like, what do you hope people get out of the musical experience or the stuff that you're involved with?
That's a good question. I think that, like, from the audience, if you feel something when you watch it, you know, if you feel connected to it in some way, then that's all you can really ask for. And that's like one of the greatest things that someone can tell you is like, I saw a little bit of myself in that, like, you know, and you didn't necessarily mean to do that, but like, but in a way you also didn't mean to do that. So yeah, I think that's something. And then from you know, the actor's perspective, like, if we can all feel like we've been heard and we've put ourselves into this process, then I'm happy with it. That's why I do it too, right? I love it. I love putting myself into the art and seeing the reflection that's thrown back at me. I think it's really, it's very rewarding when it comes out that way.
That's awesome. And that was actually my follow-up question, is kind of like, why do you do music or why do you participate in it?
Yeah, I mean, like, very frankly, because it's awesome and fun. Like, I love it, and it gives me so much joy to do it. And I always think to myself, like, you know what? Like, there are so many people who have this, you know, idea of like, oh, maybe I'd like to become a musician. Like, if you know, an X, Y, and Z prevents me from doing so. There's nothing wrong with that. I've also been there of feeling like, I'm not cut out for this aspect of being a musician or whatever. But those of us who choose to, you know, forego, or like, I guess, like look at the risks and say like, fuck it, like whatever, I'm still going to do it. That is like I think that's a really special thing, you know, to do and to remember that like, not everybody can do this, in the sense that like, not everybody is willing to take risks and be financially unstable and like, you know, make choices that are like very risky, you know, mm-hmm. in the name of art. And so like there's a nobility in doing that. And there's nothing wrong with also deciding that you don't want to do it in the end. But I always have to remind myself of that. It's like, you know what, like I chose to do this, and because I chose to do it, I deserve to be here. And that's what it is. So
The last question I have for you, that I like to just kind of reflecting on everything, like if you could rewind or go see yourself, you know, 15, 20 years ago, what do you think you'd say to yourself, as far as like prepping or whatever the future holds kind of thing?
15, 20 years ago. Well, 15, 20 years ago, I'd be like, well, you're like 10 years old, so do whatever you want. You're like fucking 10 years old. I would just be like, you should like, you know, remember that you're going to become your own person when you grow up, right? You are going to learn so much just by leaving your house and going and meeting new people who aren't from that same small town as you, but like from all over the world. And that's something that's going to really change you. And so don't worry, don't sweat the small stuff. Like, and I still worry about, you know, what am I going to do when I grow up? I still think about it all the time. Like, what am I going to, you know, like, what's my long-term plan? I don't know what my long-term plan is. And everyone always wants to ask you that. And it's like, well, you know what? Yeah. You make choices that you think are good at the time, and then you evaluate them later. And that's just the best you can do. So, you know, to the person I was, let's say like 7 or 8 years ago, like I would just say like, yeah, don't sweat it. Just try to do what's best for you. And you know, that's okay. You might make a mistake, and it's also okay.
I love that. I think a lot of people are going to learn so much from this and just truly enjoy hearing your story as well. So thank you so much for doing this. Genuinely appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Duncan.
Yeah. Cheers. Shouts out to Cynthia for being on Made for Music, especially with all the incredible projects she's got going on right now. She's got a very busy schedule, so genuinely appreciate that time. Make sure to go support her on social media and whatnot. I'm sure there'll be a lot more details to come about the stuff she's working on. Also, be sure to sign up for the Made for Music newsletter on the website or our socials. And as always, if you dig what you hear, please rate and subscribe to Made for Music on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your preferred podcast medium is. I truly appreciate that extra effort, and I will see you next time.